As you can see, we have to look long and hard to find correct physiological postures. Our Posture of the Day award goes to this young couple. Notice how efficiently she dissipates momentum with the movement of her arms. Her arms are positioned at her side, her head is over her shoulders and correct, with good leg movement. He also stands erect, with good movement of his arms. Wasn't that fascinating?
Okay, that's time of the beach. So these patterns of people who walk like this, bob their heads, or have them boom back and go from side to side. This is extremely devastating to the disc in the jaw, TMJ, a tremendous contributor to TMJ dysfunction. So we have to address people's movement patterns. Christian?
If you're walking incorrectly like that, but you feel you've got to keep moving, you need to get out and walk every day, is that compounding the injury by doing this if it's improper?
Actually, yes. It is a contributing factor to pain. So we want to, sometimes a lot of people aren't aware that they're walking incorrectly to begin with. So one of the main things we're doing is we do some movement work to loosen things up so that they can move. One of the main things we do is just change their awareness. A lot of people aren't aware that their arm is cutting across in front of them 10,000 times a day. Once you tell them that it's supposed to be at their side, not with their back of their hands presented, but with the side of their hands, then they can consciously make that alteration. As they make that alteration, it's subtle, but it will have a tremendous effect on the musculature, and it becomes easier. As it facilitates the release of pain, then they say, gee, first it's awkward, and then it becomes more natural. So it's actually better to think about how you're walking, even if you have to say, oh, tuck my pelvis, lift my head, move my arms. We spend some time doing that, training that. Although it feels awkward, as they do it more, it becomes easier. It's better to walk consciously and help yourself than to walk unconsciously and contribute to the pain factors. Yes?
I used to think that it really couldn't be done. I mean, people walk the way they do because that's the way they were built. But I was doing some long distance running, and then it's funny how you can become aware of those things on your own. All of a sudden, one quiet morning, for some reason I tuned into the noise my feet were making. And they're going boom chick, boom chick. And I thought, wow, that's really funny. I wonder why one foot makes a different sound. And I discovered then after paying attention that I was having a heel strike on one foot and a toe strike on the other foot. And again, my shoe wear was reflecting that.
And so she changed that by using her ears till they sounded right.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a great factor.
And it felt very awkward those first couple of weeks when I was making myself make them sound the same way. And then it got to be habit, and I wasn't really dealing with pain then, but I probably prevented
a lot of pain, which is what we want to do. So consciousness or awareness is a great factor, contributing factor to biomechanics. I was a swimmer, and just swimming every day, I got to think, gee, I'm turning my head every time this way. This kind of seems like a little unbalanced. So I consciously forced myself to learn alternate side breathing, which was awkward at first, but didn't take too long. And so I breathe this way, and now I can do this. I do three strokes. It is great because it works out with my breathing very well. I do breathe every one and a half times, and it balances my body better. So you can learn to do this.
I was just going to say, you don't have to take a breath on that opposite side either. You can still breathe on one side, just turn your head and look the other side if you're not comfortable breathing both sides.
So these repetitive movements can both heal us or hurt us. We want to make sure that you choose the first. Yes?
When we were younger, we were taught to stand up as if somebody was pulling the top of our head. Is that correct?
In a sense, yes. You're using the muscles, as long as it's not force, but it's a beginning. You'll notice that those plumb lines were, it's almost as if somebody were holding them up. There is a sense of using the erector spinae muscle in the back, which is the one that takes you from here and raises your head those extra 3 inches. To engage that is excellent without tightening it. Yes, you don't have to. This military neck position is incorrect, where you try and straighten your neck. That's coffee break. You don't get any.
Can we take breaks to go out and get something back in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure.
No,
I'm going to continue.
You have to stay in that chair for the duration.
Correct.
Yeah,
I'm
going to watch you walk.
I know.
Okay, so again, awareness, you can change your patterns. And it's very important. Children go through a process of walking called creeping. First, they move both their arms and their legs together at the same way, and then they start to move their arms and legs on the same side unilaterally the same way, and that's how they learn to creep along the floor. And then finally they learn how to crawl, which is they learn how to move alternate cross. It's called cross patterning. It's very important for physical, mental, emotional development. A lot of children who don't go through the crawl stage or the cross patterning develop what's called dyslexia, because they don't make that right brain, left brain body connection. So our movement is very important. People that we rehabilitate, especially people who have gone through spinal injuries, who come from paralysis, have to go through all these stages of unilateral and then cross patterning procedures to reintegrate that, to relearn the brain. So we're finding that movement therapy has a tremendous effect for people who are coming back from paralysis also. There's some interesting work being done there. We'll go on and biomechanics is a disruption of normal movement patterns in the body due to increased states of tonus and increased interjoint pressure. It means when muscles are tight and when joints are pushed together, you'll get a lot of firing out of those and change your gait patterns. Okay, there are certain laws that we work with when we do this work. So an understanding of the principles, the medical principles of why this work takes place, why pain arises, is very important to understanding the pain patterns. And we're going to examine a few physiological laws so that you can understand the science behind neuromuscular work or body work and the pain mechanism so that we can affect a change. It's important to understand, at least it's important for us as therapists to understand some of these principles. For people in pain, we explain the ones that we need to. For us as therapists, we need to know them pretty thoroughly so we have an understanding of, gee, this person's in pain, why? What laws are at work? The first law is my favorite, and this is just says, when an impulse is passed once through a certain set of neurons to the exclusion of others, it will tend to take the same course on future occasion, and each time it traverses this path, the resistance will be smaller. What does that mean, Ed?
Practice makes perfect.
Habits.
Practice. Good.
Distortion.
Good. Just neurons is nerves.
You learn the pain,
and
it becomes
patterned. You learn pain. I'm picking on Ed because Ed's an electrician. Basically, it means that when you there's less resistance. This is a physiological law. It's also interestingly enough for people who have taken psychology courses in college. This is called the law of learning. You can learn all sorts of things. What it means is that when you're going to walking to school in the morning and you go through the empty lot and the quickest way across it is kitty corner, then you walk, you say, gee, I'm not going to walk around the block on the sidewalk, I'm going to go right through that empty lot. And you walk from one corner to the other, and as you do that, you wear down the grass a little bit. And then when you come home that day, you say, gee, that was pretty neat. I saved 5 minutes. I could sleep 5 minutes earlier in the morning, later in the morning, and stay at school a little later and still get home on time. So you cut across that again. And this time, you know that path, so you look forward to it. And then day after day, when you go to school, you think about, I'm going to go that way. And you start to wear a path. in that lot. Pretty soon the grass disappears. And only the mud is left. You're walking on a dirt and you wear a path. And the same thing happens in our nervous system, is that when you have a lot of, instead of walking on, we can learn a couple different ways. We can learn by walking day by day and learning. Practice makes perfect. We can learn that way. We can also, and that happens in our neurons, as I was saying, by cross-crawl patterning and creeping and learning how to walk. A little bit each day, we educate our muscles and nerves on how to develop fine motor skills. This is the way it's supposed to happen. The other way it happens is with a bulldozer. When you get rear-ended, sitting at a stoplight and somebody is talking to their neighbor and it hits you at 40 miles an hour while you're standing still and your head goes like this, and thousands of pounds of pressure means that you get an impulse like this is happening and goes across a certain set of neurons, it will literally blast new pathways in your nervous system. It will like take a bulldozer to that lot and say, well, the first time it will go through and scrape all the dirt down to subsoil, and next time you come through there, you'll have a channel that wide that you find it very difficult to get out of. So the law of facilitation says that each time you travel that, it will become easier. This is the law of learning. It's also the law of trauma in the body, is that when you have this trauma, these old injuries are in your system, and when you start to what this means in the long run is that when you're in pain and start to, when it gets gray outside, like Aunt Tilly, it's going to rain. I can feel it in my bunion. Or, gee, I can tell it's going to rain. The atmospheric pressure increases, which is stimuli. Then all of a sudden, gee, she always feels it in that lumbago. Or when you get stressed out, I feel it in all that old foot, my old trick knees kicking up again. These are facilitated pathways in our nervous system. We have to understand how they get there, and what that means is that when we start to get stressed or excited or overloaded or underfed or underrested, and these old injuries are reoccurring, it's because they're in the nervous system. Part of our job as therapists is to break up these patterns and put more beneficial patterns in. One of the main ways we do that is with a technique called depotement, which is basically, you've probably seen old massage movies in the movies. A lot of people, when they think of massage, they think of this guy in a white sneaker going up and down their back. This is a form of depotement. Basically what works now is just to send impulses through their neurons, and the wonderful work of this is that you're re-facilitating information to the brain. For people who are paraplegic and quadriplegic, there's been a lot of work done now for people who are have been paralyzed and are regenerating nerves. So this is exciting. It's an exciting technique. It's basically working with this law of facilitation, facilitating new pathways instead of basically getting out of a rut. So understanding that one is important. The next one is the Arndt Schultz law, which means that weak stimuli activate physiological processes. Physiological processes mean normal operating mode of our body. Very strong stimuli inhibit them. This is very important for us to understand. And what it means is that the body likes to work in a very economy of energy. It doesn't take much energy or current to operate the body. And it likes slow, rhythmic sort of input. The body, we learn better this way. Most people don't need to be blasted with a bullhorn. This makes the body operate very well. It's when we get a lot of impulses, strong stimuli, like this, from an accident or a trauma or a stress. This law means that the body doesn't like that sort of impulse, and it tries to inhibit that impulse. It tries to shut down. So what it does is that this most pathology or disease of the body is not too little energy. It's too much energy, and too much energy starts to shut the body down. So we have to understand that trigger points are areas of high intensity, and they give off too much energy, and they stop the physiological processes of the body. They affect our blood supply, the oxygenation of our tissue, our ability to absorb nutrients, vitamins, our fatigue level, our pain threshold. So we want to look at how to take strong stimuli and turn them off. What we're trying to do is, we all know what too much stress is. Too much stress is too much old injuries, papers that are due, bosses that are looking over our shoulder, overbooked on our appointment calendar, pains in our bodies. All this will contribute to stress. And too much coffee, neurostimulant, there's a nice one. Too strong a stimuli, and it starts to shut the body down. So we want to turn those off, those sources of noxious impulses or too much stimuli. We want to turn them off so that the physiological processes can reestablish themselves in our body. Question?
Would you just review briefly the karate chop approach?
No, what we find is that this approach as approach to the new, what we find most effective and potent is this sort of action. What the most effective part of potent or this particular technique is the fact that it sends a vibration like a drum. Boing, 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 and this, it's those vibrations as they feather out, like throwing a stone into a lake and having those ripples go out. You want to let them go all the way out before you introduce the next set of stimuli. What you're doing with this sort of technique is you're interrupting the wave patterns before they have a chance to do their work. So we're finding slowing down. If you do this on fleshy parts of the body, you'll see the tissue go. So we want to time our tepotent or our input. It's very light and direct, and you're like on and off the body. It's just like hitting a drum. So you want to allow those wave patterns to go their full gamut before you introduce the next wave pattern.
It's like a 1 second interval?
Yes. Well, depending on the part of the body. If tissue is very dense, it's like a drum, they fade, or the high end of a piano, those wave patterns fade out very quickly. Whereas the bass, say in the abdomen area or in the thigh where there's a lot more tissue, you'll see them waving. So you judge it depending on the area and the tissue that you're working on. Okay? Okay, I want to take a moment and explain the reflex arc of the body. What happens? How the body receives impulses from the periphery and then reacts to that. I'm not going to do that to you this time.
I just waited.
Okay, the normal reflex arc is that you have nerve receptors in the skin and the muscles in the joint, and the viscera means organs and the blood vessels. Basically, you have them. We'll talk about the muscles and the joints of the skin. You have nerve receptors out there that send a signal into the brain when you get a little stimuli, like you, your clothing brushes over there, you feel your watch, you feel that go in to your nervous system. This is a spinal cord, and it goes into this area right here called the gray matter of the spinal cord, and the gray matter excites it a little bit, and if you have a little wisp of hair hanging down the back of your neck, you'll feel that and it'll go in. It's a weak stimuli, so it activates a physiological response. So it will go in through the spinal cord, and then the spinal cord will say, gee, that's tickling me. Brush that aside, and it will send a signal out to the muscle to say, move that aside, or twitch, or shake your shoulder or something. And the nerves that go out are called the efferent impulses, will also affect, they'll go to the skin, to the nerve receptors that tell you to move. What this means is burning your finger would work
if you put your finger on the stove, a normal reflex arc will send a signal down the input nerves, if you will, the afferent nerves, into the spinal column, which will then say, magnify that 10 times and go out and tell you to jerk your muscle. It will send a signal to the muscle of your arm and finger to jerk that away. This happens before the brain even knows about it. If you stick your finger on a stove, your finger will be off the stove before you realize that you, oh, gee, I burned my finger. You don't have it on there and say, I'm burning my finger. I better move it and take it off. This is a normal reflex arc. It means that this, the, what it means is that the spinal column and these neurons in here have the ability to make decisions besides the brain. It's a direct mode. So this would be a normal reflex arc. This is helps this mechanism is our body's way of protecting us and from our environment and interrelating with our environment. Very helpful to do so we don't burn our fingers all the time. This is a physiopathological reflex arc. Physio meaning body, pathological means dysfunction or disease. So this is a what happens when this is how the body can harm itself, how the nervous system can cause its own problems or cause disease in the body and cause pain. So we'll say that we've had an injury in our neck, and we have a trigger point, and the muscle has developed in there because it's been left untreated for a long time. Trigger point has all these, a very tender area, it has referred pain to the central nervous system, and when you press on it, it sends a lot of information, strong stimuli to the nervous system. What happens is that the strong, when we're going along, we press that trigger point, it sends a lot of information into the brain, into the nervous system, the spinal column, which then magnifies that 10 times. The spinal column takes anything that comes in and magnifies it 10 times. It takes a 1 milliamp per second impulse and magnifies it to a 10 milliamp per second impulse. So what happens is that this sends out an increased signal out to the body, which then tightens the muscle. Okay? So when it gets, remember, strong stimuli inhibit physiological response. So if the body feels like it's being threatened or there's too much pain coming in, it will tighten the muscles around it. It will, which will again tighten the joints. So you'll become stiffer in that area in your cervical problem, in your cervical area, because there's a trigger point in there. Trigger point fires in, the muscles get rigid, the joints get stiff, the skin prickles up, any viscera or organs in the area will also be affected, or will send, if you are in so much pain, it will start to shut down your digestive system and affect the functioning of the organs of the body. It will also cause vasoconstriction. It will tighten the, it will send a signal to tighten the area of the blood vessels to the area, so it will interpret it as that if there's a lot of trauma or impulse coming in, it's a threat, and maybe bleeding there, so shut down the blood to the area. What happens then is that this muscle tightens, and it gets a signal to the area to tighten the area, so it's also getting less blood. What does that mean? It means that it's getting less blood, it'll get more tender. The trigger point will send another signal saying, I hurt to the spine. When the spine gets a signal that says, I hurt, it sends a signal to split the area, to tighten up. So it sends a signal, tighten up. And it gets less blood. And so it hurts more, so this signal, I hurt. Tighten, less blood, I hurt. And this reflex arc gets set up in our body that can happen after an injury, and if it's not addressed or interrupted, this can go on for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. You can have these reflex arcs that are firing all the time. Strong impulses which are setting up pathology, or your nervous system is causing disease in your body. We need to interrupt this. We need to turn this off so that the body can return to normal operating mode. So I want to discuss how that this process is also a law, how the body transitions from an acute pain, from an injury to a chronic pain. And the first way this happens is the law of unilaterality, which means that a mild irritation is applied to one or more sensory nerves. The movement will take place on one side only, usually on the side which is irritated. This means that when you get an injury, it usually hurts on the side of the injury. The body will try and dissipate that energy through a normal reflex arc, and if it is not addressed or if the original trauma and the muscles that are tight are not addressed, it'll form a trigger point, and it will transition into this next law, which Pfluger's law, which is called the law of symmetry. If the stimulation is sufficiently increased, motor reaction is manifested not only on the irritated side, but also on the side of the opposite side. What this means is that the body's trying to get rid of this energy that's coming into the spinal column. If it's a small amount of energy, it doesn't matter because that is just will send it out into the tissues and that will be a normal process. If it's too much energy, then it wants to get rid of it. It'll send awareness of pain up to the brain. The first thing it will do, it'll hurt on this side. And then if it hurts for a long period of time, it'll start to bleed out on the other side, right? On the other side of the spinal nerve that it's coming into. Which means that people who develop pain in this shoulder, and if it's not interrupted, the next thing they experience is that they'll get the exact same pain on the other side. And so people will come into us and say, gee, started off my neck was hurting on this side, but now it's hurting on this side. And that worries them because this pain's starting to move around. That's a scary process for them. And this is what's happening, is that the body is bleeding out the extra energy that's coming in here, right out this set of nerves, over to these same muscles on the other side. And if that's not, if that process isn't interrupted, it will change to the law of intensity, meaning reflex movements are usually more intense on the side of irritation. At times, the movements of the opposite side equal them in intensity, but they are usually less pronounced. All this means is that as the intensity increases from these trigger points coming in, it will first hurt more on this side, but and then you may feel a little twinge on that side. And the law of intensity says that sometimes if it increases, it'll hurt just as much on this side as it does on this side. It's still trying to bleed out the extra energy. And if that isn't interrupted, you'll go into the law of radiation. This is all starting from an acute injury. It says if the excitation continues to increase, it is propagated upward and reactions take place through centrifugal nerves coming from the cord segments higher up. What this means is that this reflex is coming from one side into the spinal column and bleeding out the other side. After that gets full and it can't bleed any more energy out, it'll send information up the spinal column trying to bleed it out through other nerves to other parts of the body, and you'll start to get tightening in other parts of your body. The first place it'll bleed it out is in those old facilitated patterns, that old football injury that you had when you were in high school. That knee will start to act up after you've been in pain for a while. Your lumbago, the back that you sprained as a kid, will start to act up. The first place the spinal column will bleed out the extra energy or these impulses, noxious impulses, will be through those facilitated nerves in other parts of the body. So it'll start to hurt, not in your shoulder if that trigger point is sending so much information in, it'll start to hurt down in your leg, down in your lower back, up in your neck, old injuries. And if that isn't interrupted, you'll eventually get to this place, the law of generalization, which means when the irritation becomes very intense, it is propagated in the medulla oblongata, the brainstem, the reticular activating system, which becomes a focus from which stimuli radiate
to all parts of the cords, causing a general contraction of all muscles of the body. What does this mean? It means that if there's too much energy coming into the from an injury, from a trigger point, from a trouble site, into the central nervous system, it will try and bleed it out any place it can. And if it can't do that, it will eventually send signals all the way up to the medulla oblongata, or this area which controls every muscle in your body, controls all the tone. And if it reaches there, then you're in trouble, because then the whole body will start to tighten. The brain will feel like it's come in, and anywhere we work on them, they hurt. They touch their shoulder, oh, that hurts. Touch their thigh, oh, that's terrible. Touch their foot, oh gosh, everything hurts. Their whole body hurts. These are the people that takes the longest to get out of pain. These are the people, we like to see them before that, but we see plenty of people that come in who are in this, they've been through these patterns for years and everything hurts. You have to find out where the major area of the inputs are and turn those off and eventually work them back through all these pain patterns, back through the law of radiation, back through the law of intensity, back to the law of symmetry, back to the original pain, and then get them out of pain. So this is the process that people go through. This is the stages people go through in their journey to chronic pain. So people come in who hurt everywhere, they haven't been in pain for 72 hours. These people have been in pain for years, and it takes a long time to get them out, but it's possible. This is how this looks. You have your original trigger point coming in with a factor of 10 and going out. If that isn't interrupted, it'll go down and interrupt this old lumbar sprain that you had. Cervical whiplash. It'll activate the lumbar sprain. All this is happening from an injury up here. And if that, then this will start to throw in its own input into the core, and it'll go down and this sacrum coccus, this ice skating injury when you fell on your tailbone, 5 years old, and that will start to, all this will start kicking in, and strong stimuli will tend to start to shut down the body. So we want to understand this process of how we go from a simple pain into a chronic pain. And people are in chronic pain. These are the people who come in to the doctor and say, gee doc, I hurt everywhere. And they say, well, we can't find anything that's wrong, it's all in your head. These people are just not all in their head. This is physiological processes which are going on. We need to understand them in order to understand the pain mechanism. Yes?
How can you tell if the pain is just merely being reflected into those old injuries, or indeed that old injury has been re-injured for some
reason? Basically, they'll tell you that it's an old injury that's acting up. If they use words like, gee, I've just re-sprained an old injury, then it has been re-injured. But usually they'll say, gee, my neck was, I got in this whiplash, and since my whiplash, my lumbago has been acting up, reacting up. It's not a re-injury of that. It's, you would look at the cervical area up in the neck and see what kind of impulses are coming from there. So a lot of times it's the terminology that they use will give you the clue. Yes?
I have to catch a bus.
Fine.
So can I just ask you a question? What criteria do you look for when you're trying to find someone like you in a city?
What criteria?
Yes. I mean, do you have
to tall, dark, handsome?
No, I mean, what is their net? Are you licensed therapist? What is this?
You would look for someone who has studied this particular modality, would be a neuromuscular therapist.
Okay.
Neuromuscular therapy.
Is there any licensure or anything else that you check?
There is a certification that happens. You can call an office in Florida, and they can refer a physician or a practitioner that's local to you who's been certified to you. If you wanted to do that. Okay, next we, let's see. I think I'm going to skip this, and I'm going to explain to you a little bit about pain threshold for the time we have remaining, just so you can understand how the process of pain sort of happens in the body. want to explain to you the mechanisms of pain threshold. First, I want to tell you that how the body's, you're asking questions about referrals. The body can refer and have these reflex arcs in a couple different ways. It can have a referral, which is called somatic. Somatic means body or musculoskeletal. You can have a pain in a trigger point in your arm that refers up into basically a trigger point in your shoulder that refers down your arm. That's from one part of the body or skin or musculoskeletal system to another. And that's called a somatic referral. Next, you can have a somatic visceral referral, which means that visceral is organ, from some place in your body to an organ. An example of this would be in a cervical whiplash, you can have this goes forward, tends to tear these, depending on the whiplash, can tear the muscles in the back and set up trigger points in the muscles in the front. These trigger points in the throat can fire into the thyroid gland. Okay? What we find is that, remember that wherever an area fires to, that area is ischemic and it disrupts the function. So you can have, if you have this sort of referral pattern in your thyroid, it will affect your thyroid and parathyroid, which basically affects your body weight. So we'll have people who come in and say, since my automobile accident, I've gained 40 pounds in the last 2 months. Why does that happen? So is it because they're just sitting around eating all the time? No, it's because, or getting less exercise because they're in pain. That's not really usually the factor. What you'll find is that in examination of the tissues of the anterior throat, that you can find trigger points that fire into the thyroid gland on some people, and this thyroid gland, when you release the trigger points, you'll find that not only is their cervical pain decrease, but soon thereafter they'll come in and say things like, gee, you know that I've lost those 30 pounds that I got. So this is an example of a somatic visceral from superficial tissue into a gland, into the thyroid gland. Another example is, another type is a visceral somatic tissue. Firing of a trigger point from an organ to a superficial or to a muscle. Can anybody give me an example of that?
The heart beat.
What?
Heart attack referred to pain in the left arm.
That's correct. That's a good one. Heart attack. Here's another one. It happens to women about every 28 days. You get a referral from the high impulses coming from the uterus and referring into low back. Yeah, I'm getting low back pains. Must be that time of the month. Okay, or into the, I'm getting cramps in the rectus, stomach cramps, rectus abdominis. This is an example of a visceral somatic referral, reflex arc. Okay, another one is a visceral. You can have a trigger point in, let's say, the kidneys referring to the adrenals, and this can happen. So we want to understand that this, you can get pain patterns all over the body, and that people who divide, I'm an internist, I work for the external body, I work with bones, I'm a podiatrist, I'm a temporomandibular joint person. The body doesn't work that way. The body is all together a unit, and it will really take in the medical field a lot of working together instead of isolating ourselves from each other to provide good health care for people. So understanding how soft tissue can affect the general health of the body is very important in working with these trigger points. So I'm going to spend the rest of the time explaining pain thresholds, how we experience pain in the body. We'll do this with a little story of Jack and Jill. Okay. This is Jack. Jack and Jill have been going out for a couple years. We're going to explain that. First, you want to understand the normal tonus of the body, or the normal firing rate, to give us structure, is 70 milliamps per second, let's say, as an example. So it takes a small amount of current, 70 milliamps per second, of firing, direct current in our nervous system, gives us enough to hold me off the ground, and so I don't, and not just a puddle on the floor. It takes a certain amount of current to keep us erect and have structure. This is our normal operating mode. And when this increases, we experience pain when we get to 90 milliamps per second. When the intensity goes up and we're fine until at 89, we don't experience pain, milliamps per second. But when the nervous system starts firing at 90, that's when we start hurting. That's when we say, that hurts, that's pain. So to understand that, we're gonna tell a story of Jack and Jill. Okay? Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. This is when Jack and Jill were 5 years old. They were neighbors, kind of high school, like grade school sweethearts. So they went up to fetch a pail of water, and Jack fell down and broke his crown and had a little small cervical strain. Okay? And had his normal tone is right in here. He like strained his neck, and his mom gave him Bengay and hot water bottle, and it was stiff for a while and hurt. But after a couple weeks, it went away, and he was back to himself. But what didn't happen was that there was the levator scapula muscle wasn't completely released, and was in a state of spasm. And unbeknownst to Jack, his left shoulder was half an inch higher than the other because of this cervical injury, and left him with a little firing going on there. That little firing represented to Jack's nervous system a +5, okay? A +5 in his nervous system. So his nervous system at his neck has 5 milliamps per second, okay? Now, Jack and Jill continue to be friends through school. Jack's out showing off for as a teenager. He's showing off for Jill what a manly dude he is. And he's swinging in a tree and hanging by his knees, sneezes and falls out and strains his low back. And his quadratus lumborum, his right low back here. Again, he gets over that, but that represented to his nervous system, that was a little worse problem. And that represented to his nervous system a 8 milliamps per second. So he doesn't experience any pain with these in his normal operating mode, but they're in there. There's a little extra impulses that are going on.
To explain one thing.
Yes.
You're saying that doesn't happen just at the time of the accident. That's an ongoing thing?
This is continuing to fire. We set up a reflex arc in there, which is a little trigger point, which is still firing, but it's no problem. There's the tissues haven't been released. There's still a muscle that's tight. There's vasoconstriction that's going on. And this has not been released back to normal tone. It's tighter than the muscles around it.
Can they actually document that with meters?
Yes, they have meters that measure the resistance. Meters just like this one. Mm-hmm. That measure the impulses going through a muscle at any given time. So yes, they have. They can document. These things, the reflex arcs that get set up can last not for 2 weeks, but for 20 years. We work on people that have trigger points that when you work on them, say, gee, I remember when I fell off the horse at age 5. And you release them. The amazing thing is that they will release after 20 years. Once you turn off the current, as soon as you turn off the current to it's like being electrocuted. You can't move until somebody turns off the current and you go like this. And that's all you need to do is to turn it off. You interrupt that.
Do we normally recover completely from we've all fallen 8 bazillion times in our lives,
we
must recover completely from most of them.
Yes and no. As we go through this, you'll understand that some of those may be in there. A lot of.
Well, I'm thinking even if I maintain 1 milliamp from each fall I've ever had, I'd be at 300 now. I mean, I'd be in just terrible pain. You must.
There are lots of contributing factors. Let me go through this and see if that answers your question. Okay. Next thing that happens is that, so these two injuries are, nothing's happening. He doesn't experience any pain, but they're in his body firing a little bit above normal. Okay? Still, he's not up to his pain threshold. Now let's describe a series of events that happen to Jack as he gets older. He's a grown-up now. Okay? These little things are in there somewhere. First thing is that Jack comes home from work and opens the mail. There's a Dear Jack letter from Jill. She's left him. She's run off with the Rolfer, and she says, "I don't want to be around you anymore." So, what this represents to Jack's, this is pretty emotional. It's pretty traumatic for Jack after his childhood sweetheart. This represents to his nervous system an increase of, let's say, 5 milliamps per second. Okay? That's just that much more excitation coming into his nervous system, the stress of this relationship going down the tubes. That would be a +5. So what would happen is that his normal tonus would go from 70 to 75. His systemic tonus would go up that much. So he's getting a little tired. What would happen in his low back is this would go from a 78 to an 83, okay, milliamps per second. He experiences no pain, but maybe a little stiffening in his low back. Okay, over here in his neck, where he strained it when he fell down and broke his crown, this would go up to an 80 milliamps per second. Doesn't notice much there. Okay, so this has been a relationship trauma which hasn't really affected him physically too much, emotionally, that he can tell. He's not aware of it yet. Okay, until he comes home the next day and he has a pet goldfish, Bertha. Okay, he's really attached to, likes Bertha almost as much as he liked Jill.
That's why she left him.
That's right. I just couldn't compete with the goldfish. Bertha's been with him for a long time, but he comes home and Bertha's floating belly up in the tank. Oh, woe is me. This is really traumatic for him, okay? What does this represent to his nervous system? Not as much as three. We'll say another 5, okay? Another 5 for the, or 6. Bertha was meant more to him. So this would be
a, get the numbers right now.
Okay. So this would represent to his normal tonus a 81. So his whole body is becoming tighter under the stress. And to his low back, 6 more milliamps per second. Feels that as an 89. His back's really stiff, but it doesn't hurt yet because he hasn't hit the pain threshold. Okay? And you can come in, we're gonna be done in a few minutes. And to his neck, also 86. Next thing is that he's really bummed out and about these two things happening, but his week is gonna get worse because he's gonna come home and he's gonna find out that the 7-Eleven he's been working at, the boss's son needs a job. He's home from college, and so he wants to give his son Jack's job. So Jack gets pink slip. So he's out of career at 7-Eleven, and has no cash. So that's traumatic. So there's another 7, we'll say. That puts him at 88 milliamps on this normal tonus. This will put him at 96. 96 here and 92 here. What has Jack experienced at this point? Where? He's going to start to experience pain in his neck and his low back. Okay? He's now gone over and he now feels these two pains and he wonders, gee, since I lost my job, my neck and my back are hurting. And he doesn't know why. Okay? So you're starting to understand this process. Okay? Next thing is that Jack goes out and he's really bummed about all that's been happening in his life. Goes out on Friday night, goes down to a local watering hole, has a few too many drinks, comes out and drives his new Volkswagen Bug that he's been saving up for, drives it home. He's feeling no pain at this point because he's sort of anesthetized from the alcohol, and wraps it around a telephone pole on the way home. Sustains a minor cervical injury or a minor clinical whiplash, gets out of his car and looks at his car and freaks out because it's just been destroyed. This represents a plus 8. And that would be another 2 here, 96 here, and 100 here. What's this Jack's experience now? Okay, he's experiencing a lot of pain in his low back. Okay, he's experiencing a lot of pain in his neck. Very intense. And since this thing has happened, he's experiencing pain everywhere in his body. His whole body hurts. Okay? So Jack's in the state of general law generalization right now. Okay? Everything hurts. Okay? Now, let's go. What happens next is that Jack calls up Martha, who's a massage therapist, and says, I need a massage right away. I've gotten into a car accident. Everything hurts. So Martha gives him a massage treatment, and what that represents to his nervous system is a minus 7 milliamps per second. So he experiences that as a decrease in the input into his interstitial pool. And that goes down to 95. And that goes down to 93. His experience is that, what? He walks out and he's out of pain, systemic pain, except his low back still hurts, but not quite as much. And his neck hurts, but not as much. And he thinks, Martha, what an incredible therapist. She's gotten me out of systemic pain. And he comes up to Holden, and he goes to an inspiring sermon by Rudy Edmonds about in the image of God. And he starts thinking about, gee, I need to get my life together. And he gets really inspired. And what that represents to his nervous system is another minus 8, because spiritual matters are hard to put numbers on, but very can really relax the nervous system. You're done in just a minute.
Okay, yeah, I'm leaving at 10:45 here.
Gotcha. Okay. I have 10 seconds. Okay, and what that represents is, puts him down to 81 here, what's he at here?
87
and 85. Okay, so what he represents from that is that he has a faith healing. Rudy Edwards. He goes in and he comes out, and all of a sudden his body's out of pain. Okay? He thinks, wow, what an inspiring talk. And then while he's up here, he goes to the kitchen and has the first good meal he's had, vegetarian meal in years. What that represents, all that increased nutrition coming to his body, represents another minus 5. So he's down to 82 here, and he's down to 79. He's down to 83. And this whole process, mystical process of pain threshold, has a name. It's called life, and we go through it all the time. Everything we eat, everything we think all the trauma, all the nervous impulse has an effect on the pain in our bodies. Okay, so I hope this has given you a little clearer understanding of how the pain mechanisms work, why we can just lift that little pencil and send our whole body into pain, why everything we do and everything we think and all our spiritual matters have an effect on the pain threshold and how the quality of our life. And that's all the time I have. I want to thank you all for coming. And if you have any questions, you can talk to me afterwards and outside. Thank you.